This is the Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. Thrilled to be with you just before your holiday. Dana is back next week. Mexico is threatening to impose its own tariffs back on Trump if we impose more tariffs on them. I'll get to that topic in a little bit. I find it very interesting and what the inevitable results of all that stuff is going to be. But nonetheless, I thought it was sort of amusing that they're like, yeah, we'll do it too. I don't think it'll have the impact that ours would have on them. But nonetheless, as I said, we'll get there in a little bit. A very big story easily today is the ceasefire announcement. Biden taking some sort of weird political victory lap that he seems to care about maybe as much, if not more, than any of the actual, you know, good things in the world happening between Israel and Hezbollah. This is not Israel and Hamas. This is Israel and Lebanon or Hezbollah. I'll play a little bit of the ABC News breakdown of what the actual agreement is. And then I think the biggest thing is this is going to be a catalyst to a conversation for a lot of Americans about whether or not it's going to be a template to what can happen between Israel and Hamas. And it's not. And I'll tell you why, but here first this.
Under the agreement, Hezbollah and Israel will observe a 60-day truce. During that period, Hezbollah fighters will move north away from Israel's border, and Israeli troops will gradually withdraw from Lebanon. In the last few months, the exchange of fire has left more than 3,000 dead in Lebanon and at least 70 Israelis killed. In addition to relentless aerial and ground assaults, Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah was assassinated and exploding pagers took out hundreds of its fighters.
Okay, I got to stop it right there. I think that it's so interesting that an aspect of all of this, to go from the beginning of the conflict between Hezbollah specifically and Israel to the point where you have a ceasefire agreement in place that Israel is comfortable with as long as it's actually something that Hezbollah honors, which is very difficult for these terrorist organizations to trust them to do. I will remind everybody that there was actually a ceasefire agreement before Hamas ever attacked Israel in the first place that they ignored. But nonetheless, that pager reference, the fact that the Israeli government, the Israeli military was capable of gaining access to specific technology, specific equipment, something as dated as pagers, that was being used by some of their enemies, their terrorist enemies like Hezbollah, and then creating a scenario where they could essentially take out a whole bunch of people within that group that wants to do them harm, backed by Iran. That the significance of that, that's probably going to be one of the more valuable military intel stories of the last however many years, or modern warfare types of things that happened. And it's going to fall by the wayside in a discussion about how we got to where we got. America will take way too much credit for any sort of ceasefire agreement. Specifically, Biden will. And I'll just say one other thing about this before I move on to anything else. It is interesting that as we barrel toward Trump being in the White House, and a lot of people will probably give him credit if a lot more peace is found than we seem to have right now in our society. But it is interesting that as we barrel toward that, some of the enemies of our allies are recognizing the threat of America, which feels to be a thing happening. Strong people in positions of power, strong leaders, willing to take action if necessary, cause a lot more peace through being a better deterrent. This is obvious. This is simple. This is a reason that maybe some of that credit will be appropriate when given to Trump. If he causes a ceasefire or a stoppage of fighting between, say, Russia and Ukraine or Hamas and Israel. Of course, the hostages are also a tremendously different component to the ongoing conflict between the terrorist group Hamas in Gaza and Israel. They have to be released if they're even still alive, as horrible or honest as it is to say that out loud, which is something that did not exist in the ongoing negotiation between Hezbollah and Israel. Thank God. But nonetheless, I think there's a lot of valuable and say, we can take away this kind of information from that. And yet I think most people's knee-jerk reaction will be to say, how does it deal with the other conflict, the one we've been watching for quite a bit longer, where, idiots are protesting in the streets sometimes and in one-sided ways without seeming to understand the totality of what's going on. And I don't think it's going to apply as much as maybe some others will say it does. But we'll see what occurs there. Moving on, another thing out there that I thought was really important today, and I'm not sure that this is as big of a topic to discuss it so quickly after, you know, ceasefire somewhere in our world, but it's one that personally makes me so mad. I'm so annoyed by this type of thing in media, and I can't help it. So the other day, Texas Land Commissioner Dawn Buckingham makes an announcement. She brings up a family that lost their 12-year-old daughter, their 12-year-old, you know, sister, a child, to someone, two illegal people in our country who actually, you know, sexually assaulted, raped, and then killed a 12-year-old girl named Jocelyn. So in Texas, they make an announcement. They name these potential facilities that will exist in the near future after her, and they're very specific about what the intention of these facilities will be. I'm going to play audio from Dawn Buckingham herself, and then I'm going to play you audio from MSNBC and how they rephrase it, how they create a talking point that will be used by the left or voters who barely understand these sort of issues or the conversation at all, to create something that doesn't exist. And it infuriates me. But here, I'll play the audio first of the announcement itself.
Exciting announcement. The new project that the General Land Office is going to embark in that I have created is the Jocelyn Initiative, in which we will locate appropriate land under my jurisdiction to lease for the construction of violent criminal deportation facilities. My office has identified several of our properties and is standing by, ready to make this happen on day one of the Trump presidency.
Okay, I want to make sure that it's abundantly clear. She said the construction of violent criminal deportation facilities that would be not designed to hold anyone long-term, but short-term for the people that are dangerous to our society, that apparently we don't have places to put them right now. That's the actual design and the intention behind the facility. Let's hear what MSNBC and some of their guests refer to this as when they cover the story.
I mean, the governor of Texas has already offered up 1,400 square miles of space, Nicole, to put concentration camps in place. Are we serious right now?
No, you're not serious. You're lying. This is incredible. I want to say bad words. I'm going to have to pause so I don't say those bad words. But honestly, like the crazy thing to me is that's not the design of it at all. Of course, anyone who knows even a modicum about history knows the concentration camps weren't designed to be short-term facilities that held people till they were deported to somewhere else. They were places that kept you captive for a very long time and killed you. That is not at all the design of anything that's going to happen in Texas. I hate that I have to say that out loud, but yet I do to refute the ridiculous point that gets made. But this is also designed to be a place for violent criminals who are harming American citizens who have no right to be in our country. How can we argue about these things? It's a genuine question. And how could you sit down and have a conversation with someone where what they say out loud to you is they want to build concentration camps? And you look at them and you go, they don't want to do that. And they say, yes, they do. And you go, can you look into that a little bit before you actually keep saying it? Can you just do a tiny bit of research and see if you still think that's true when you're, you know, given the information by an actual source that's not biased and telling you something without even giving you the receipts? Like, that's the other thing about this, even though I know MSNBC has had a tremendous downtick in the ratings, and it might be a blessing for an Elon Musk to buy it from a just business perspective. Of course, they don't think that, but it's true. But the thing that I can't get over is that they don't even provide like the clip itself to back up the idea that concentration camps are what's going to be built, and people will walk around and just say it. They'll just throw it out there as one of the many things they're afraid of or they think will be a problem. It's just insane. And so I absolutely believe that it's valuable to engage in conversation with people you disagree with. I think it's ridiculous that people are saying they want to skip their Thanksgiving dinner because the people they'll sit across from the table from are people they fundamentally disagree with about stuff. I think there's so many things about the idea of, you know, divides in our beliefs being ways to divide us in proximity are just insane. But nonetheless, if someone were to say to me what this person just said on MSNBC, I would tell them they were wrong until I was blue in the face because of how crazy the statement is and how, you know, infuriating or annoying it would be if they refused to go educate themselves just a little bit more. But it's something I couldn't get over today and something I absolutely think is a bigger deal if you hear it more often as rhetoric that actually like plants. That's the other interesting thing. And I'll say this before I take a break. As someone who covers politics for a living, who talks about, you know, all kinds of political stories on radio shows and whatnot, you hear some of the rhetoric things that don't stay. They don't stick. They don't become things that you'd hear somebody who barely pays attention repeat. And you wind up being sometimes grateful and sometimes disappointed in that. But it's just crazy the way that the media system itself tries that stuff out and then sees which things you repeat and you say most often that it gets happy about because it can keep going with those things and just feed you more of that craziness. But it's just interesting to watch that process happen. By the way, one other very interesting media story that's out there that we'll cover later on today in the show is the amount of money that was just donated by the Harris administration to someone that was going to do a friendly interview regardless of whether or not that interview was, you know, on MSNBC or anywhere else. And all of the fallout from this conversation or from this, decision, it's amazing to me that we've gotten to a place where, one, some people are surprised by a $500,000 payment to Reverend Sharpton's nonprofit before he interviews Kamala Harris on MSNBC. And then also how long that network tried to prevent this story from being something they even acknowledged and how crazy it had to get for them to be like, okay, it's true, but we didn't know anything about it. But I'll dive into that in more detail in a bit. As I said, this is Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
Our partners for this portion, the non-firearm firearm, the Bernagun, and that's exactly what it is. It's a non-firearm firearm. It actually can shoot chemical irritant projectiles that can stop threats from up to 50 feet away. It's a very powerful deterrent, and it's great to diversify what you have in terms of self-defense. I always will carry. I have zero issue with telling someone that that lethal force to protect yourself and your loved ones. I mean, that's the point of self-defense. There are times when you're barred from carrying, and I would love to live in the kitten and sunshine world where I never have to go to a gun-free zone, but I'm a grown woman, and I have to do grown woman stuff like work and pay bills and go to places sometimes where guns are banned. I don't want to be a statistic because someone else lives in the fairy tale that gun-free zones work. So this is where Byrna comes in. The Byrna gun, again, it's legal in all 50 states. There's no background check. There's no waiting period. They ship it right to your door. And I know a lot of my friends that also have gotten this as another option for self-defense, especially when they have to go in some of these areas where they're barred from carrying their actual firearm. You can check out all the models that they have. The Byrna SD is the most popular selling option that they have. They have many others. They also have different accessories, projectiles. And from November 29th till December 2nd, rather, you can get 15% off site-wide on all Byrna products. Visit Byrna.com/Dana for 15% off. That's BYRNA.com/Dana for 15% off.
They allow IRS agents to go after you even though they don't pay their taxes? The IRS agents auditing you owe a lot in back taxes. 6,000 IRS workers owe a total of $50 million. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast, because who says you can't make fun of people while staying informed on your own personal time? Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is the Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Let's fire off a quick five.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
You know, some of these you probably won't miss because I'm sure they're going to be talked about a lot. Busiest Thanksgiving ever. Air travel, 18 million plus Americans taken to the skies to visit family, to visit loved ones. Apparently not listening to the social media people that are saying a boycott, boycott, boycott if they don't agree with your politics, which is good. Sit across the table, have a conversation, maybe learn some things from some of the individuals in your life that voted a way that you couldn't fathom. Voting. I love that idea. Lots and lots of people traveling this holiday season. So it's going to be busy, going to be stressful. Good luck to all involved. Americans will throw out 316 million pounds of food on Thanksgiving and just after it. There's a big take about how this is somehow relevant as far as climate change or anything else is out there. I don't care. I don't want to dive into that world at all today. But I will tell you that $316 million feels like too much. It feels like we should find a way to be closer to the exact amount of food that you need for whatever the amount of people is you're having over. But it would also be really upsetting if you ran out of food on Thanksgiving. Like, out of any day for you to not want to be under on any sort of assessment, that would be the one. That would be the whole holiday itself. So I don't blame us for not being perfect about this. We could probably do better than 316 million pounds of food, though. Irregular sleep patterns increase the risk of stroke, heart attack, all kinds of things. I love when there's studies out there that you can't do anything about. This feels like one of those. If you have an irregular sleep pattern that's work-related, you're a person like me that has, you know, an odd professional schedule where sometimes it's earlier, sometimes it's later, this is the kind of news you don't need. This is the kind of study that I could just like look at and be like, I would rather have been blissfully ignorant of this. Thank you, sir, for telling me anyway. If you can fix it, though, go ahead and fix that. Try to have your sleep pattern be normal because it can increase your risk of bad things happening. Again, a fairly obvious study, but out there anyway. Also, I love this one. It's just shaming us in whatever way it is. 1 in 4 people are still carrying some weight from last holiday. You're still a little bit heavier than you were, you know, when you started out the holiday season last year. And so you're not dropping that weight, I guess. Something's going on that's wrong. Again, something I don't need to know. If I haven't fixed that by holiday season this year, it seems like I'm okay with that weight. So leave me alone, darn it, I guess is my response to it. But I'm amused by it. And of course, be healthy, be responsible. Important to say that out loud, too. One other thing that I'll probably get to more later. People are now naming their babies after dogs. Dog names are becoming more and more popular, according to the internet. Some of them are not really dog names, though, so I guess that's good. But I just find this to be idiotic and hilarious that there's a debate as to whether or not your child should be named a similar thing, what you name your pet. But that coming up and more, I'm in for the rest of the show today. Dana is back after the holidays. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
ReadyWise is always ready, even if you're not. And this is U.S. food packed in a U.S. plant, sent out from this U.S. plant, so you always know the chain of command for your food. But that you get free and fast shipping on most orders, and they have an array of product choices to meet every budget. ReadyWise is ready to support you being self-reliant and making sure that your family and you're all fed and you're all taken care of. If anything, you know, you have a supply chain disruption or a national disaster or an economic shift, ReadyWise is there. Now, they have a team of in-house culinary experts that prepare each of their product choices, whether it's, you know, the emergency 1 month supply or the 3 month emergency food supply. They make it to where not only is it affordable, but also you have exactly what you need in terms of your caloric intake, your protein, your healthy carbs, all of it, perfect for any emergency. And you can have breakfast, lunch, and dinner options. They have whey milk. They have everything. And a 25-year shelf life. So visit ReadyWise.com. Use promo code Dana20 at checkout to get 20% off of your entire purchase. That's ReadyWise.com, promo code Dana20 for 20% off.
Make some common sense of the crazy headlines with the Dana Show podcast, your on-the-go guide for getting up to speed on today's most important stories. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or your favorite podcast platform.
This is the Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. Thrilled to be with you. Elon Musk is certainly a topic of conversation for a whole lot of people. I thought Joe Rogan did an interesting interview where he talked to a venture capitalist about a couple things. One of them was Doge, the department that's going to be all about government spending and how to fix it, how to make it better, at least give a bunch of recommendations that may or may not be followed. I hope very much that they are followed, and I hope there's enough power there to effectively create change with all the waste that exists in the bureaucracy that is our government. But nonetheless, that's one of several places where Elon Musk is a talking point in the world of politics. Another one came up on MSNBC and other places in which they're accusing Elon of giving state secrets to Vladimir Putin, which sounds insane. That sounds like the kind of thing that rational people wouldn't even say out loud. And darn it, it's happening. Here we go.
Clearly, Putin has a type. He likes narcissists and egomaniacs that he he knows as a case officer he could easily pander to and manipulate to do his dirty work. We are under attack. Russia has been using different levers, whether that's corruption networks. In this case, it's influencers like Donald Trump, like Elon Musk, to really kind of sow discord. And it's particularly troubling with Elon Musk in this case because Elon Musk has access to state secrets. He has top secret security clearance. It's possible that some of that is seeping through.
It's possible. I love that he says it could be happening. Well, I don't know. Do I even have to know to say it out loud? Here's one thing that I find hilarious about that entire position. Anyone in the world of politics, anyone that gets to the point of being successful, granted, certainly presidents, but a whole lot of people beyond that, they're egomaniacs as well. I know a lot of people love Trump, and I'm not saying I dislike him at all, but he's certainly a guy that cares a lot about his own ego. If you've seen any of the things he built and the name that he put on them and how big it was, I mean, come on. And he's not the only one, of course. Anyone in that world is self-obsessed in a way that very few people are. Vladimir Putin is probably a guy who cares quite a bit about his own ego, so much so that he's ridiculous about it. And so if that's all it takes to take advantage of someone for a Putin, then he's owned every politician that's ever existed in that world. It's ridiculous to say that simple thing. And also, again, have the focal point be Elon Musk. There's such an obsession with mainstream media to make him the true villain. And maybe it's because the power he wields is so different. Yes, Trump is the president, the incumbent president. And yes, he'll have a ton of power as said president. But the world's richest man is the world's richest man. And if you're fighting against anything and everything that is the corruption that exists within our government, within our society, having a whole crap ton of money is going to make you more formidable. So maybe that's the real reason they're going after Musk harder than anybody needs to. I assume that same sentence can be said and has been said many times about Trump or anyone else. Maybe they also realize that that's falling on deaf ears now. So go after who you think the number two is if you failed to go after the number one. I'm not really sure what the plan is for a lot of politicians and pundits out there saying this stuff. But I want to compare it now to something else that was going on that I do like a lot. This is Joe Rogan. He sat down with a venture capitalist named Mark Anderson. Actually, before I even get to the stuff about Elon Musk, because it's not as important as mainstream media wants to tell you it is, even though it is important, and I think Elon can do a lot of good, this is more fascinating. Again, Mark Anderson, well-off venture capitalist, privately funded or helped fund a whole bunch of startup companies, very interested in the AI space, as it seems almost everybody is right now. And on Joe Rogan's show, he said he was invited to a meeting at the White House with the Biden administration, where they told him and people like him, people who help fund our economy through the decision-making and the companies that they wind up propping up, what they were and weren't allowed to invest in, which is surreal as far as a conversation must go for this person in this world that he's in. Here's a little bit of that audio.
Media. The AI thing was very alarming. We had meetings this spring that were the most alarming meetings I've ever been in, where they were taking us through their plans, and it was...
Like, no. What kind of... Can you talk about it?
Basically, just full government control. Like, this sort of thing. There will be a small number of large companies that will be completely regulated and controlled by the government. They told us, they just said, don't even start startups. Like, don't even bother.
Wow.
Like, there's just no way. There's no way that they can succeed. There's no way that we're going to permit that to happen.
Wow.
Yeah, they just said, this is already over. It's going to be two or three companies, and we're gonna control them, and that's that. Like, this is already finished.
Oh my God! Yeah. Now, when you leave a meeting like that, what do?
You go endorse Donald Trump.
I love that response, by the way, too. You go endorse the other guy, because the nice thing about the founding fathers is they created this check and balance system that allows you to throw your weight behind somebody who's not going to do the stuff that this administration just told you they're going to do, like they're going to be in power forever. But that is insane. And again, it's not surprising. A whole lot of people know this happens and know this happens all the time. But I do ask a simple question when I play that audio and realize that that story is now out there in that way by someone that says they were in the room when this happened, is how lazy this version of trying to control everything has become. How many people in power don't care if you find the truth out? Because it's brazen to invite a bunch of people into a room who have the financial means to ignore you, no matter what you're threatening to do, and granted, not ignore you entirely, because I'm sure they could actually harm you if they wanted to do it, but invite you into a room and tell you what you are and aren't going to do, and then assume when you walk out of that room, even if you tell people, who cares? It doesn't matter. And I wonder if, because it's a lot of, you know, California-based venture capitalists, they just assumed everybody was on their political side of the aisle. So you can say the quiet part out loud and not be afraid of it being a story that breaks in the mainstream. And Joe Rogan, I will argue till I'm blue in the face now, is actually mainstream media. He's not called that, but that's not a bad thing inherently, because the places where we actually go to get real information, where most of us pay attention, those are truly what is mainstream media today. All of the legacy media, all of the crap media places out there that are biased and not giving you, you know, unfiltered information, they are becoming less and less popular. So anyway, I just think it's so interesting that someone can go on and have that conversation and be willing to tell that story publicly. And I doubt the Biden administration will even respond to it. They'll just ignore that it's a thing that's out there at all, which is crazy. But here's the other part, the part about Elon Musk. I just thought this was pretty funny when they were joking about this.
Could you imagine if you're running an agency and you have to have a meeting with Vivek and Elon?
Yes.
And you got to open your books?
Yes. Yes.
It's like Office Space where they brought in the Bobs for consulting.
Yes.
Hey, what do you do here?
Exactly. That's exactly what it's like.
What are you going to do here? What have you guys been doing? Where's all this money been going? I thought it was interesting. A few different politicians, including some that will also be involved in Doge, have put out their template for how to get rid of the massive amounts of waste that exist within our government. And the amount of people that think you could save a couple $1 trillion, I'm not saying billion, I'm saying trillion correctly, not the way Biden does it when he misspeaks, but a couple $1 trillion easily by looking into all these different places where funding is going and shouldn't be going, or where excess funds are just left and people wait till the last minute to use them on whatever they want, the use it or lose it version of government that exists a whole lot of places. There's so many different avenues to recover money, or to stop just throwing it into, you know, a bucket that's essentially useless to the average American. And again, not that this is surprising, but it's amazing how easy it is for the people on the inside to tell us that part too. Once they know that this is something that's going to be attacked, once they know that this is something that's going to be paid attention to, and I'm not accusing anyone involved of being, you know, on the take per se, but the fact that this is like the worst kept secret in DC, or in general, I guess, with the American people now, is something to pay attention to as it occurs as well. It's something to really take note of how long you've been taken advantage of, and how sort of, you know, unapologetic they've been about doing it. And at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, how easy it was to not do it, how easy it was to go the other road. Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy and anybody involved in that organization, or that, you know, brand new government oversight, are going to discover like how deep the well goes, and it's going to be shocking. And a whole lot of people are just going to tell you it's not true. I know that this is going to happen, by the way. I know that sometimes I'm even a victim of wanting to believe this, and this is why you have to always do your own research. And no matter how much people make fun of that, you have to dive in. You have to pay attention to every single aspect of something, because when it gets deep enough, people just won't believe it. People just be like, oh, this is too crazy. There's too much of this. So it's probably not true, because just the size of it seems insane. And yet it's going to wind up being true. We're going to wind up staring in the face of ridiculous amounts of corruption and, you know, bureaucratic overspending. And I mean, there's one other good example. I use this example a lot. I know when you say the name Hunter Biden to someone on the left, they roll their eyes like, oh God, you're talking about Hunter Biden again. But one of the more valuable, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, things to me in the last few years has been the outing of all the stuff that Hunter did to get money from foreign governments, all the different, you know, laws that it seemed like he broke, and how Washington's main defense for it, this administration's main version of, you know, it's not as bad as you think it is, was that Biden didn't know about it. Essentially saying out loud that people can do this stuff. You can enrich yourself on the back of a family member who's a politically relevant by promising political favors. And that's totally okay, totally legal in Washington, as long as you don't tell the family member what you're doing, which also seems insane. I'm not saying I believe that excuse, but it's once again why I think that corruption has just gotten sloppier. It's just become a thing that they do less well than they did before, because to say that we don't have a problem with this as long as Joe didn't know is essentially saying we found the buried bodies and we know who murdered these people. We just don't know if the one other person involved knew about it. And for that reason, no crime has been committed at all. It's crazy. And again, I hope that this appointment, all the appointments, there's another big announcement that got made today, and I'll talk about this later. Trump chose someone to head up the NIH that's going to go after a lot of people and a lot of the, you know, the version of everyday life that's existed before within that organization. And it's going to be amazing to see it. And of course, mainstream media, or well, legacy media, that version of media is attacking this person already. So I'll dive into that a little bit later too, but it's interesting to see. But again, I imagine the biggest thing over the next few years, if a lot of the people who voted Trump into office get what they want from it, will be a disbelief in just how deep the well went as we start to get told how bad of a problem this is, and that being the only reason to try to discredit it from being true. All right, I'll take a break. A lot coming up. Craig Hollins filling in on The Dana Show.
Our partners, they help bring you this radio program. It's the people over at Preborn. It's a great organization that works with mothers and introduces them to their babies with ultrasounds. They can hear their baby's heartbeat. And when that happens, if a mother's considering life, that baby's chance at life doubles. And you can make a difference with a leadership gift. Any donation counts. And it's Giving Tuesday coming up. This is a gift that reaches eternity. They're trying to provide 1,500 ultrasounds this month and December to save more babies. And all the gifts are tax deductible. Preborn has a 4-star charity rating, so you can give with confidence. And they partner with these women. They put ultrasound machines in these women's clinics. They are right there where, you know, abortion on demand, you know, as birth control, these rates are the highest. And they don't just stop, you know, with the ultrasounds. They also partner with the moms and help with maternity and things like diapers and car seats and so much more. They partner with them through the toddler years. Donating is simple and it's so easy to do. Consider a leadership gift of $5,000, $10,000, even $15,000. Any amount helps at all. Visit preborn.com/Dana to donate, or you can dial #250 and say keyword baby. They're looking at reaching the goal of 1,500 ultrasound sponsorships. That's preborn.com/Dana or #250 keyword baby.
Keep your finger on the pulse with the Dana Show podcast, delivering timely news with insightful analysis whenever you want, straight to you on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. Thrilled to be with you just before the holiday. I got to say, I love this audio, or at least I love part of this audio. The owner of an RV and a guy, a truck driver who was driving a box truck in North Carolina, I got into an accident. The RV was loaded with snakes, some of them venomous. And then the two people involved in the accident wound up going viral on local news for giving their side of what occurred and what was important. Truck driver's name is Clayton. The owner of the vehicle, I don't think, gave his name publicly, but and probably for several reasons. He is a reptile expo guy, according to why he had all the snakes in his car. Here's a little bit of what that sounds like when you crash into somebody and snakes spill out of his RV.
I would say this is, it's in the top 10 of different.
I had some venomous snakes get loose in the camper, so I had to come back in there trying to get them snakes before the EMS personnel come in, you know.
I do not like snakes. I do not like snakes at all.
And I don't really care about snakes. My wife is terrified of them. I love the dude who owns the RV, who's like, I had to go get them snakes and make sure that I corralled them before anybody came in and got hurt by them. This dude is driving his RV with just snakes loose behind him, gets into an accident and things go awry. And the tow truck driver's like, I've never seen this before. I don't really know what this is like. I don't know anything about this. It's amazing. It amuses me so much. I really want to know what that guy, the guy who owns the RV, his day-to-day life is like, because I imagine it's amazing. This is North Carolina and not Florida, so it didn't make my Florida man stories, sadly, but it is crazy, and I love it being out there. One other piece of audio that went viral that I want to play. This is a teenage girl throwing a tantrum inside an AT&T store. This is in Atlanta because she's being told by her mom that her phone is going away because she hasn't been behaving well. A surprise, surprise that she's misbehaving. If this is the way she reacts to being punished with no phone, this is insane. This sounds like the guttural, like, screaming of an animal and not a human. Here we go. Okay, there's got to be something bad there. There feels like there's addiction as a component to this. A lot of things are going on. A part of you wants to feel bad for the mom that the kid is going this crazy. But then again, I think a part of you also wonders how much discipline occurs on a day-to-day basis for a child to do this in public. Kids today, teenagers are aware of how many other people have phones, how many people might record this insanity and put it up on social media. And she doesn't seem to care. She seems much more adamant about the fact that her phone not be taken away from her. It's insane. I wonder what you would do, what a lot of parents who hear that audio, especially from a different generation, people whose work is done. You've raised your kids. You raised them to not behave that way. And you hear that occur, what you would envision yourself doing, maybe in the moment or especially when you got home after the kid went that crazy in public. But that's all over the place. That's making the rounds online. And I imagine more than any other reason, the reason that it's so viral is because of just how insane it is. And honestly, it does make me think that our addiction, all of us's addiction to technology and telephones is probably bad. Not quite as bad as that girl, but bad in general. All right. We'll talk about some serious stuff. Ceasefire going on between Hezbollah and Israel. That and more coming up in a bit. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
The folks over at Byrna Gun, it's a non-firearm firearm. The Byrna SD is the most popular model. And it shoots chemical irritant projectiles that can disable threats from up to 50 feet away. There's different models. There's different accessories. It provides a pretty powerful deterrent. And it's the non-firearm firearm. It doesn't care about the gun-free zone signs. It doesn't care about any of that. And there's no waiting period. They send it right to your porch. No background check. It's legal in all 50 states. It's a great way to diversify your collection of self-defense so that you have something for even if, you know, guns are banned and you got to go there. You have a way to protect yourself so you're not a statistic. So from November 29th to December 2nd, you can get 15% off site-wide on all Byrna products. That's Byrna.com/Dana for 15% off, B-Y-R-N-A.
This is The Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. Thrilled to be with you. A bunch of stuff to talk about just before the holiday. How predictable is this? Trump cabinet picks have already been targeted with bomb threats, swatting attempts. This is according to a spokesperson. If you don't know what swatting is, it's when you publicly out the address of someone or call in some sort of bomb threat or something so that they wind up having to deal with a massive, police response. Oftentimes, actually, when you see these swatting things happen, it's because they also will call in, bomb squads and stuff. It's crazy, but it's one of several things. It's happened to politicians. It's happened to just everyday Americans. It's happened to all kinds of people, but they're doxing, they're swatting, they're doing all kinds of things for cabinet positions. And these people haven't even started their jobs yet. Granted, we see this on both sides of the aisle. This isn't unique to one side than the other. However, the amount of outrage will probably be quite a bit different. Some in media places will almost be understanding or somehow, see the emotional side of someone being so upset with Trump and his picks that they're willing to do stuff like this, as opposed to the way they react when it happens to Democrats. It's just a sad truth of the world we live in, but it is a thing that's out there and it's happening. I want to dive a little deeper into Jack Smith's decision to get rid of these cases, the federal cases against Trump, before Trump winds up in office, before he has his own, people in the judicial system that can make certain decisions based on the, ridiculousness of some of these cases and the way in which they're doing it. One of the more obvious things happening is for these to be dismissed without prejudice, essentially meaning that they can be cases that get reopened later. And actually within Jack Smith's own writing, when he's asking the courts to get rid of these cases that he started, that he fought not only to have tried before an election, which he, thank God, failed to have happen, but that he was adamant were so important they had to occur even as Trump was getting closer and closer to actually winning the White House. He's asking for these things to go away just for a small amount of time. And he said, as soon as Trump's not president anymore, other things that you're allowed to reopen, it's in his own writing, is these protections will only exist as long as this individual is in the office of president. And once he's not, open season to go after him again. One of the biggest reasons to do this, it's not just to prevent people in positions of power to categorize them differently. Essentially, he's owning the narrative on it, which is one of the things I've read out there. But it also prevents Trump from being able to potentially like pardon himself for things that he's not even being tried for anymore. The federal cases were always doomed the moment that Trump got into the White House because he can forgive himself for that stuff, even if he, you know, didn't do it and, you know, winds up getting somehow found guilty of it, whatever it might be. Those are all avenues they're trying to take away. They're preventing the president from having the power to make these things cases that can never be reopened against him a couple different ways. The judicial system can do that too, of course. But this is something that they're trying to prevent from being a decision that gets made, by the Trump team once that administration starts. The reason I think that's so significant, I fumbled a little bit across explaining that to you, but I find this so wildly, you know, important. This is, I think, one of the biggest reasons they lost the election as tremendously as they did. I think going after Trump legally, going after him for any, whatever the case might be, and even then referring to him as a convicted felon as often as they did, even though the one case that found him guilty, yes, it was just one case for anyone that doesn't know that, all 34 counts come from just one case, and one action that they said happened 34 times was typically a misdemeanor charge in the world of business filings, but somehow became a felony in New York City only because it was Trump that was involved in it. But what I think is fascinating about, you know, all of that stuff, again, is that the American people, they voiced their opinion. They said who they actually believed or what they actually thought was important here. And so if you still go after him, even if he can't run again himself, who's ever running, you know, to protect him, saying that, well, if Trump gets thrown in jail for a federal case or they attempt to, I'll go ahead and pardon him. It'll help J.D. Vance or whoever's running next. It might be a continued repeated mistake that's happening by the left, by Democrats, by, you know, crazy people like Jack Smith, arrogant people in a sense like that, that might continue to benefit conservatives. It's sort of amazing to watch them not learn from their own mistakes here, but that seems to be the case. Some other things out there that I thought were interesting, some big Trump nominations have come through recently. One of the bigger ones to me is probably in the world of the NIH. And I think this is going to be tremendous for a lot of reasons. But you have an individual, a doctor, a professor at Stanford, who's a professor in the School of Medicine. He's also a professor in the world of the economy, which seems valuable and important. But an individual who seems to truly understand and know what was bad or the mistakes that we made during COVID. He's someone that was long against shutdowns and a lot of those other policies. He's been nominated as director of the NIH. He's a very vocal critic of Dr. Anthony Fauci, and more so than just Fauci, a vocal critic of the ways in which the Biden administration protected Fauci and questioning him and any of that stuff. I just find it, incredible that as I look through the headlines and people are describing this latest nomination by Trump, the first thing they say, it's not even in the article itself alone. It's actually in the headline of a lot of these, media outlets that he's an anti-shutdown guy, as if that's a bad thing. A bunch of studies have been conducted and more will, I'm sure, be conducted for years to come, saying how terrible of a plan that was. I mean, the people involved in making those decisions, people like Dr. Burke, have said out loud that they had no real guideline to say 6 feet of separation mattered or lockdowns mattered or masks were going to be effective. They just said some stuff that they didn't really know that they could prove. And it turns out they can't prove as more and more data comes out about this. And yet people would still think that this is somehow a bad pick. I'll play a little bit of audio of this person, a person that, again, will have, I think, a tremendous amount of impact on the actual NIH and another of the many departments in our government that seem inherently corrupt or just broken, and how willing he'll be to question the way things already work. You know, like, that's the one thing before I hit play on this audio that I think about. I think it's like a mob thing. Like, it's a mafia thing. Like, don't upset the wheel. Don't upset the olive cart. Do what you're supposed to do. This is the way things are done. This is the way things have always been done. How dare you think about doing it any different? I feel like that's how a lot of people who get these bureaucratic jobs are treated for any amount of time when they first start out until they start drinking the Kool-Aid. This guy seems like he's very unwilling to drink the Kool-Aid, no matter how many people pull him aside and say, look, this is just how we do stuff over here.
The places that have followed such a strategy, Florida, Sweden, other places around the world, have done much better in terms of overall health outcomes than places that have had lockdown-focused strategies where the disease is spread anyways, but with catastrophic damage to the poor working class. Going forward, my goal is going to be to help people understand that the lockdowns were an enormous catastrophic mistake.
They were,
that should never be repeated.
Right.
I believe that lockdowns should be seen as a dirty word, that when we think about lockdowns, we should recoil with horror, because what is the...
As I'm playing this audio of someone saying that as we talk about lockdowns, we should recoil at the idea of the word with horror, that he's actually a medical professional. He's a doctor. He's a teacher at Stanford. He's well informed on all of the medical reasons and economic reasons, since he's also a professor of that, that would be relevant to this discussion. And everyone, I think, who looks back on this knows the only thing that backed any of that decision making was a claim that it was necessary in the world of health because it was catastrophic in the world of our economy. You knew that going in, and you said, well, one is more important than the other. And then when you look back, and that's simply not true, that it didn't help us in that one world that we said we had to sacrifice everything else for this to make sense. It even more so seems to be. And you know what? I just love this for a different reason. There's some audio that I've been using some other places in the world of like radio. It's the head of NPR saying that facts are just not helpful in our society anymore. They're a hindrance to us getting what we want done. It's old audio. I think it's been out since like April, but it went viral again recently. And she truly does say that one of the biggest challenges she faces, and this is when she was working for Wikipedia, was the desire for the everyday human to know what the actual truth is. I'll play some of this because I just think it's amazing to watch people say this stuff out loud and to believe this stuff as strongly as they do. But it makes me feel again like the job of someone in charge of the NIH or the Defense Department or any other department where, hey, I'm going to go after what's broken inside this system and I'm going to make it public so people know when I dismantle it that I'm dismantling it for a good reason, that there's a whole bunch of individuals like this. Like, how dare you? I care more about the truth than anything else. And I just don't know how we got here. But here again is Catherine Mayer, the CEO of NPR, when she was talking about Wikipedia and how bad it is for us to care about the truth.
But one of the most significant differences, critical for moving from polarization to productivity, is that the Wikipedians who write these articles aren't actually focused on finding the truth.
Ugh,
they're working for something that's a little bit more attainable, which is the best of what we can know right now. And after 7 years...
Hold on a second. I got to stop right there. She says the best of what we can know right now, meaning I might tell you something's a fact that I know isn't a fact yet and might wind up be proven to not be a fact at all in the very near future. But hey, my excuse is I didn't know that yet. I thought maybe I was right. I thought the best case scenario is that this thing that I told you was true winds up being true, even though I accepted the possibility that it wasn't, but I didn't tell you that part.
I believe that they're onto something. That for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth isn't necessarily the best place to start. In fact, I think our reverence for the truth might have become a bit of a distraction that is preventing us from finding consensus and getting important things done.
The truth is a distraction is one of the more insane and terrifying things I've heard anyone in any position of power in any walk of life say, and she says it so nonchalantly. Like, yeah, we all know this. We all agree with this. Let's move on to how we can shape the truth to be what we want it to be so that we get done whatever we want to get done. I applaud the president or the incumbent president, President Trump, for a lot of the decisions he's making with his cabinet, because a lot of these people, not all of them ideologically fully aligned with him, seem to oppose some aspect of the thing they're going to wind up in charge of. And that seems good. That doesn't seem bad. And we get to judge after they tell us what all the bad things are, if they're true or not. We don't have to be afraid of the oversight. The only thing we have to be afraid of is lying. And it feels like a lot of that's already happening and we're just letting it go under our nose. And so again, I just think it's crazy that there's so much uproar before any of that actually happens, just because people are likely to do it. All right, quick break. A lot more coming up. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
Brighten up your timely news consumption with The Dana Show podcast, where every update comes with a little dash of not so serious on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Let's do a quick five.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I do love this one. Donald Trump Jr. said that podcasters might be part of the White House press room in the near future, meaning some of the most relevant, influential people in the world of the internet might actually have a seat at the table to have some of those discussions and ask some of those questions. That seems appropriate for the world in which we live today. Also, I saw out there for other things that just seem interesting, not exactly a world record we'd want to be breaking. But 30,000 people a year are now dying via assisted death. People who are being allowed to be medically killed. This is something that's on the rise, and more people are in more places, more countries are fighting for more rights to do this. This seems like a terrifying thing, not exactly a fun thing to talk about, but a thing out there in the news you might miss. Also, a Bitcoin, it slid toward $90,000. Every time I read a story about Bitcoin, I'm mad I'm not invested in Bitcoin, because I remember seeing a documentary on Netflix about it when it was like $100 to buy one, and I didn't get in, and I'm an idiot for not getting in, but it slid back to 90,000. There's been a bit of a sell-off on it after a huge gain right after the election. Interesting to see the world of cryptocurrency continue to be volatile, but overwhelmingly beneficial for anyone that's got skin in that game, at least from years ago. And I'm disappointed one more time that it's not me. That's one of those people. Should you wash your Christmas tree is a real question people are asking. And the answer is no. You don't need to do that. Maybe a little bit of bug spray if you really think there's a bunch of insects in there. But by and large, don't scrub the whole thing down. Don't go into, you know, COVID versions of behavior where you were scrubbing your groceries. If you're one of those people, just live with the world, live in the world where you cut down a tree and you put it inside your house. Because that's a decision you already made, baby, and you don't need to rethink it. But I do love that one. And one last thing, I just thought this was interesting. Two, as far as stuff out there, a top plastic surgeon was suspended after turning a patient's noses into potatoes. Probably not a good look. Probably not something you wanted. Seems horrific, actually, in general. But that's another real story out there in the news and not a fake headline. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show. More coming up in a bit.
Get the lowdown on the latest news with a side of laughs whenever you want. Subscribe to The Dana Show podcast on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is The Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Thrilled to be with you. One of the bigger stories, of course, today is the ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hezbollah, an organization that operates Iranian-backed in Lebanon. Terrorist group is what a lot of people would call them. But anyway, Hezbollah and Israel have agreed to a what sounds like might be a permanent, but at least 60-day ceasefire. Some of those core agreements would potentially be broken by Hezbollah. And then the United States has said if that happens, Israel has every right to defend itself. So that part has already been stated out there publicly, too, if there's any need to put it out there. I see a lot of people comparing this brokered deal, Biden taking a lot of credit for it, the U.S. and France both saying they helped broker it, as a template to be used between Israel and Hamas, and that's just not accurate. The fact that there are hostages in the other situation, the conflict's been going on much longer, and Hamas has broken ceasefire deals before, make a lot of aspects of that discussion quite a bit different than the one that's occurring between Hezbollah and Israel, even if there's a, you know, fragility to the potential of this being a long-term ceasefire there. And one thing that seems to get understated but should not be is Israel's effectiveness in fighting the leaders of these organizations to essentially eliminate a bunch of them to make these sort of peace agreements make sense. And one of the most effective things they did, of course, and you probably heard of this, although maybe not, was utilizing the pagers that were distributed to a lot of leaders of Hezbollah and arming them with bombs that could take out these individuals whenever Israel thought that they were a threat, which is something they did early on after Hezbollah started to be aggressive toward Israel, and can't, again, be forgotten in how you get to where you're at. Sure, the U.S. or anyone else can take credit for brokering the ceasefire, for being involved in these discussions, while still accepting Israel's position that it has to be overwhelmingly comfortable with these sort of agreements, without then also acknowledging how well Israel has done at fighting the bad guys. I know a lot of the discussion is on the loss of innocent life, and that's horrific and terrible, and I'm not going to pretend it's not something that matters, but the organizations that Israel is fighting is purposefully putting civilians in harm's way and hoping that means that Israel will stand down. And so again, a part of getting to where we've gotten, does Israel deserve, and this might sound silly to be saying so often, but it seems as though it needs to be repeated the way that some people cover this, because of their willingness to fight in the first place. All right, another thing I want to play, I just found this funny. So Trump has been talking a lot about tariffs, and a lot of Americans don't understand tariffs very well at all. A lot of Americans assume that this means inflation is a definitive byproduct of tariffs. That's not accurate. It can be a byproduct, but it doesn't have to be one. Sometimes it actually can cause more benefit than harm. The end result of the goal of the tariffs is a little bit of a talking point for some. You have people like Chuck Grassley out there saying that it's really just a negotiating tool to get people like Canada, Mexico, China back to the table so that Trump can negotiate more favorable terms and whatever the issues are that we have between us, whether that's the border, whether that's trade deals, you name it. And there's a part of that that's easily true, but tariffs can also have other benefits. They can potentially help fund the government in such a way that if we pulled out a lot of excess spending as well, Trump has teased this before. He did it on Joe Rogan's podcast. He'd like to do away with income tax. Federal income taxes is something that would disappear entirely under a Trump administration that successfully generated a whole lot of money in certain ways. And I find that to be, you know, that would be, I've said this before, the most popular thing any president has ever done, or at least done in the however relevant past it is for all of us as people walking around today, that anyone could do. Saving all of us money that way would be awesome. But I find that amusing for sure that that's out there. Of course, creating more products here in the United States, all benefits. But Chuck Todd of NBC is actually just worried about guacamole. He's worried about avocados from Mexico because of how many we get there. And I guess he's seen the Super Bowl commercials. So he said this on MSNBC today.
Part of government, if we're not careful here and if it's not abused, and I think that is certainly a concern when you talk to the more libertarian-minded economics folks, including the folks at the Cato Institute. This is another reason why tariffs potentially are so damaging to the country, because it's so easily corruptible. It becomes part of this back and forth deal making. And by the way, just to simplify this, we're talking about tariffs, but let me make this pretty simple. If this slaps on, it's a guacamole tax. We get most avocados in this country come from Mexico. If you enjoy guacamole, be prepared to pay a higher tax for it.
Come on, get mad. If you love the guacamole, I want those people out there and complaining and upset and yelling about how Trump has gone too far. That's Chuck Todd's approach. It's trying to get you more motivated and more interested. It will be interesting to see, again, how many of these tariffs actually do get instituted and how many of them are used as a threat to cause more negotiation. But one of the most telling things, I guess I'll just put this out there too, Biden left all of the tariffs that Trump created in play when he took office, because you understand the value of them. They didn't go away. Biden didn't do these unilateral removings of tariffs over here and over there. I mean, granted, I shouldn't say all of them. There are cases where things were well, I think a bad decision was made. But there were a lot of demonstrations of the value there where that wasn't what the Democratic government, when it took over, actually tried to pull back on. And there's more that could wind up effective, too, if put in play by Trump on a lot of different levels. It is interesting for them to, you know, actively campaign in the pundit places of the world against this stuff, but not exactly complain so much in the actual action department of the world on this stuff. But an avocado tax is what Chuck Todd is calling it. I just found that hilarious. Another thing out there that I think is pretty interesting today, as far as just talking points go. So Kamala Harris and her administration, or and her campaign, are out there saying a lot of things after hiding for a few days, which I thought was interesting. One of the most significant things that's been said by her campaign is that she couldn't find the time to sit down with Joe Rogan, that he had offered. The platform was available to her, just like it was available to Trump. Many people actually credit the sit down between Trump and Joe Rogan as helping give him yet another boost with younger, predominantly male voters. And Harris just didn't want to be a part of that, platform. She gave $500,000 to Al Sharpton to interview her on MSNBC. That's a real story that broke and is out there. And it is so funny, just quickly about that one, before continuing to talk about the Rogan thing. Sharpton had every intention of doing an easy interview with Kamala Harris, regardless of if any money gets donated to a charity that he's in charge of. He wasn't going to challenge her. When you set up that conversation, the bosses didn't want him to challenge her. So it's amazing that even though you're going in for the friendliest of interviews on the friendliest of platforms, you still paid somebody off and you get caught in doing it because campaign dollars, oh yeah, you have to be public about that stuff. My other favorite part of the Al Sharpton story that's all over the news today, although Fox News covering it quite a bit more than some of the other media places are, is that people figured this out much earlier than recently. It only broke recently. But MSNBC fought and, you know, essentially tried to bury this story until it became the Association of Journalists that cared about it and tried to say that it was wrong and a black eye as far as the integrity of MSNBC is concerned. Whatever you want to say there, for the most part, when it was only like the Free Beacon or anyone else trying to gain information about if this was true or not, or if MSNBC was aware or not, which they claim to be unaware. Count the amount of times that a person in charge or an organization in charge, whether it's Biden dealing with his son or MSNBC dealing with its employees, where their excuse after something incredibly embarrassing and just like downright wrong comes out is, "I didn't know." Do you accept that in your own life? If someone gives you that excuse, if you have an employee who says, "Oh, I didn't know," do you say that, "Oh, that's okay, that's fine, no big deal"? If a parent says that about a kid that gets in trouble, "Oh, I didn't know," is that something that people usually go, "Well, you should have"? That's something you probably should have been familiar with, but it's amazing. But again, as Kamala Harris comes out of hiding and out of whatever version of vacation she was on, her and her campaign are saying that they did all the right things, that everything was great, and it really wasn't necessarily, you know, her fault that they lost, which is amazingly arrogant. I think I have a little bit of audio of Harris herself speaking, and it does kind of sound like she's drunk. I got to be honest, people are even putting up videos now where she's holding a bottle that she didn't have in her hand. Not exactly well done, because she seems to be taking over from Biden in the slurring department and other things like that.
"I just have to remind you, don't you ever let anybody take your power from you. You have the same power that you did before November 5th. And you have the same purpose that you did. And you have the same ability to engage and inspire. So don't ever let anybody or any circumstance take your power from you.
Don't let them do it. Don't let them take it." You know what this sounds like? I remember this, actually. This happened to me. I remember a boyfriend of my mom trying to give me advice after he'd been drinking a bit. I can't remember what kind of party or thing was going on at the house, but this guy was definitely not at the place where you should be giving a small child advice. And I remember to this day, the funniest thing about it is he was trying to tell me that like cheaters don't win, but he was too hammered. So he said, hey, Craig, come here. I got to tell you something. I want you to know, and I want you to think about this a lot. The cheaters prosper when people don't catch them cheating. And I was like, what? What did you say, sir? He goes, so the point is that cheaters always win and winners always cheat. And then he walked away. And that was not the point that he wanted to make. But to this day, I will remember cheaters always win and winners always cheat as advice I was given when I was like 12 from a dude who was sloshed. That sounds like Kamala Harris. That sounds right. I'll play it one more time. Picture her as the end of the Thanksgiving meal, aunt who drank way too much during dinner that wants to make sure you know some stuff before you go back out into the world.
I just have to remind you, don't you ever let anybody take your power from you. You have the same power.
You have it.
That you did before November 5th.
You do, man.
And you have the same purpose that you did.
Absolutely.
And you have the same ability to engage and inspire. So don't ever let anybody or any circumstance take your power from you.
Don't let them do it, man. Don't let them do any of that stuff. And also, you have the same shoes you had before and the same shirt, and you look the same. And all right, I got to go vomit. That's what it sounds like is happening there. All right, I'll take a break. A lot coming up. This is Craig Collins filling in and sober, unlike maybe our vice president on the Dana Show.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
That's right. It's time for Florida Man, the Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Find Dana everywhere. D-Lash or Dana Lash Radio on X, on Twitter, probably one of the best ways to stay connected. But so many ways to find her. Television, everything. She's out there. I got two Florida Man stories. The first guy was sentenced to a decade in prison for shipping himself several pounds of meth. It wasn't just a little bit of meth. The guy decided, I guess this was back in 2020, that he would make it easy to acquire some methamphetamine, 18 pounds of it, in fact. So he just like put his name, his information, and he just had it sent to him. That's not legal. You can't do that, not even in Florida. A few days later, investigators called the delivery service to ask about the whereabouts of the package that they had flagged as containing bad things. They went to the guy's house. He had it there. He gets arrested. I love the laziness of this. It's not exactly the young person version of a crime where you just tape yourself on social media doing something you shouldn't do and you get caught that way. It's even lazier. You just sent yourself 18 pounds of meth in the mail and you're like, hey, nobody's going to open that. That's got my name on it. That's my package. They're just going to deliver it to the house and nobody's going to be any the wiser. That's not a good plan. That doesn't work. Although I feel like I shouldn't tell you that for anyone out there that might do it, because I like when criminals get caught doing stupid stuff. Here's the other Florida man story. A Florida man was selling cocaine at his jewelry store, according to deputies. They arrested this guy. This was a 54-year-old guy named Pedro Martinez, which, by the way, is insane. As a Yankee fan, I'm kind of thrilled to read Pedro Martinez, not that one, not the famous baseball player and pitcher who pitched for the Red Sox and also was very much owned by the New York Yankees at times during his career, why they chanted, who's your daddy? That's not the point. That's not who this is about. But that guy who owns three jewelry stores and thought they're never going to go after me because I got a famous name, maybe, decided that if you came in, you said the right thing, it looked like I could trust you, I'll deal you a little bit of cocaine. I think there also might have been fentanyl, opioids, other things available. You just had to ask for the right crystals. You'd be like, I like the diamonds, but what else do you got? What other options are out there? He said he felt 100% comfortable walking in and doing business with people until the cops found out about it and you get in trouble. That's the kind of thing that you can't do. Held on a $275,000 bond, and probably also not so happy as the actual famous Pedro Martinez, who probably got some text messages. I imagine at least one, maybe not like a direct relative, maybe somebody who doesn't know him that well, but knows him and saw a headline, Pedro Martinez arrested for selling cocaine, and goes like, I wonder how far he fell. And so you just got to shoot over the text or shoot over the call and say, hey man, I hope everything's okay with you. Let me know what I can do. He's like, it wasn't me. which obviously it wasn't. One other thing that I love about this, the cop said that it kind of made sense. You're dealing with a cash-based business because by and large, this guy sold jewelry where all he wanted as payment was cash, which has got to feel wrong even for the people that just came in to buy a necklace. But because of that, it made it easier to kind of launder and hide some of these things. But you make mistakes when you try to sell said drugs to undercover cops. That's usually a mistake. Some of the charges involve possession of a controlled substance, possession of a structure that was intent to sell controlled substances, selling of cocaine, trafficking cocaine, unlawful two-way communication devices, and much more. The guy had more than one phone. All right, quick break. A lot coming up. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show. This is The Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Part of me doesn't want to talk about this guy. I'm not going to give his name out, but he's such an idiot. He's so obsessed or involved. And he's a crazy far left dude who wants to basically do his version of any sort of actual insurrection during the inauguration of President Trump in the coming months. I'll play some of the audio of his most recent viral video. I don't think that this means a whole lot of people are going to get behind him and do things. And it's all about him. It's not actually about whatever he's saying it's about. And you'll be able to tell that as I play the audio. But it is getting talked about enough that I had to play it. And it's not the first piece of audio or video of him that's gone viral, imploring people who agree with him that Trump shouldn't be the president to show up and demand that he get a chance to take the stage. And again, some of the stuff he's saying is just downright insane. But remember, this is the same side of the aisle that told us that January 6th was the most horrific thing they've ever seen in their society, even though people didn't show up with weapons to overthrow the government, which is not what they intended to do. Nonetheless, I digress. Here's a dude who seems very much like he'd love to do that.
I mean to be at the Capitol to change the world, and I need everyone's help to do it. I mean to make the biggest spectacle I possibly can of myself with more than 20 million people at my back. Yep. I am weaponizing blue sky, I think is what I'm attempting to do.
Okay.
I am attempting to weaponize blue sky in raising me up to the level of giants so that I can say our piece. Now, you can be with us or against us.
There's no us, dude. It's a you. And I know a lot of people are going to fearmonger based on this. And I pray that he doesn't actually have a lot of people that show up in support of him that demand that he get to speak, because I doubt anything he says is something that I have any interest in hearing. Nonetheless, I'm not trying to silence him. I just don't want to see him, you know, succeed in the environment he's trying to succeed in, obviously. But what I think is crazy about this is how he just wants his moment in the sun, and he's acting as though it's something for everyone else. So many people on social media are obsessed with themselves enough now, the young influencers and people that care more about the currency of a like or the, you know, currency of social relevance on the internet, that they want to do these things. This dude is nuts, but he is someone that I'm sure you got to be paying attention to when he shows up at the Capitol building, and maybe just detain him immediately and put him on the side because of his spoken intention to do bad things. But here, I'll play a little more.
But you need to be there, ready in whatever way that means to you.
Uh-huh.
So when I march on the Capitol, so do you. And I just hope to God we can avert war.
See, that's the part right there that's threatening actual violence. I hope to God we can avert war, meaning it's a potential byproduct. If he doesn't get his chance to speak, if his supporters don't raise his, you know, authority enough in the moment to be able to demand a stage that he doesn't deserve, it's insanity. The entitlement of people and the behavior of people. But that is a far left nut job who probably thinks of himself as overwhelmingly accepting of others and all these things that he's definitely not, saying that he just wants to speak the peace of everyone else and prevent Trump from actually being the next president, even though he won a lawful election. It's insane. But there, that's not the first piece of audio or video of that dude that's gone viral. And there are people on his social media accounts that seem to support him. So I guess we'll see what happens. But it's nuts to say it any differently. And I know a lot of people in a certain side of politics, the conservative side, are talking about it and using him as an example of his insanity. And I get why we're doing it or why people are doing it. But truthfully, he's just a very deranged man. And, you know, not all that different than a lot of the other people that think their opinion is so important because they have a social media following of some kind in general. That is something I'm worried about way beyond just politics. But it's out there, it's in the world, and hopefully because he's so willing to admit what his plans are, that winds up getting him in quite a bit of trouble early on in any sort of showing up at the Capitol building, as I said a second ago. All right, I want to play this audio. This is a Maryland mayor, Frederick, Maryland mayor, Michael O'Connor, saying that he wants to take taxpayer dollars to help undocumented immigrants, is what he calls them, or illegal immigrants, and their legal fees as they contest being deported because they're not legally allowed to be in our country. That's the kind of thing I think a lot of taxpayers, as demonstrated by, say, the election, they don't want to pay for.
In response to Trump's national immigration policies, Frederick Mayor Michael O'Connor pledging to carve out space in his local budget for a legal advocacy fund, which would use tax dollars to pay undocumented immigrants' attorneys' fees as they fight deportation.
Ensuring they have the legal support they need to stand strong and remain in this community they have chosen to call home.
They have chosen illegally to call home. I don't get any of this. You know, I saw a viral video of a young woman. I thought about playing it. I think it's Libs of TikTok that put it out. I don't think I need to play it for you to believe that it's real, because it's easily real. And she was saying, among the curse words, that she didn't understand why she should care at all, why it should matter to her or anyone else that's legally in this country, that there are people that are coming here illegally. Essentially, she said that the border should be wide open and anyone for any reason that feels like coming in should be more than welcome, and it shouldn't matter to us even a little bit. I wonder if she'd be willing to say those words to the families of people that are victims of individuals that were here illegally and committed harm, took lives. I like the individual in Texas that now has some facilities that will be named after her, because at 12 years old, she was raped and killed by two people that had no right to be in our country that were illegally here. And there are a lot of stories like that. No, it doesn't mean that every single person that crosses the border, and I'm not trying to say that, is someone that would commit horrific, violent crimes. They are committing a crime by being here illegally when they're not allowed to be here, but I digress. I'm not trying to say that every single person is the same because of any one thing, but to ignore any of those stories as if, and they usually say it's racist to talk about them, is also insane. That's insanity. And the biggest reason why it's insanity is because it's only being ignored to serve your narrative. You're not ignoring it or even aware of it, maybe, in some of these cases. I hope the people that say these things are just ignorant as opposed to, like, evil. But in all honesty, the thing that I think of when I hear those thoughts expressed is how willing you are to not accept the counter argument as even relevant. And that scares me. That scares me quite a bit for a lot of reasons. I guess the biggest of which is how difficult it would be to talk to those people. I don't think you should ever stop trying. I don't think you should refuse to break bread with somebody for the holidays, et cetera, et cetera. I've said those things before. I will say them again. What I think is more important than any of that is just the willingness for people to simply ignore the truth. Another thing out there that I think is pretty important, this happened just the other day. There is a thing going on in Texas that you will be amazed, maybe not actually, probably barely surprised at all, that MSNBC is referring to one way, and then the truth of it is actually quite a bit different. But essentially, Texas is going to create some facilities that will house dangerous people, violent people, and people that are here illegally. Those facilities is something that they're, Dawn Buckingham is the name of the Texas Land Commissioner. They're pushing for because they think there's a big need there. And then if you're MSNBC or anyone else talking about this, you're going to reshape it as something that it absolutely isn't. Again, one more time, just to state what's actually going on, and I can play the audio of the Texas officials announcing it or naming it after someone whose child was killed. They're naming it after the child, the 12-year-old, as I said, who died and was, you know, savagely also raped by people that were not supposed to be in this country, that had no legal right to be here, but offering 1,400 acres of land to build facilities that would house and then deport violent criminals. That's what's actually going on. This is what MSNBC claims is going on. Not the same thing.
I mean, the governor of Texas has already opened up, offered up 1,400 square miles of space, Nicole, to put concentration camps in place. Are we serious right now?
I got to stop it right there. You can't possibly be. I hope you're not serious, because you're insane in the things you're saying and pretending exist that don't exist. I don't know why everybody's go-to in the world of trying to, you know, create the scariest non-realistic version of society they can is Nazis. You claim somebody's a Nazi or Hitler or, say, concentration camps. But 1,400 acres of land that would be used to be temporary facilities that house, again, specifically violent criminals who need to be deported, who don't have any right to be here, is being compared to concentration camps that definitely didn't have a design that sent people away. Concentration camps killed people that were there. Not at all what's being talked about here. Not at all what would actually exist here, but rhetoric that's going to get picked up and used by people. You'll have a family member, some people listening to the show, that will say that Trump's in support of concentration camps. And that statement, your brain will explode when you hear it. You'll be like, where did that come from? How did you invent that? Where is the path that you got there? And there it is. Someone in Texas saying they want to help fund the ability to put people in a place before we send them back to where they're supposed to be is the same as killing Jewish people in Nazi Germany in concentration camps. This is the inflamed rhetoric of the left that accuses the right of causing, you know, division and hate, that constantly is causing division and hate. You're allowed to say whatever you want. I'm allowed to object to it. That's the point of the First Amendment in our Constitution. But you know what you're doing. And the fact that so many know what they're doing and do this stuff anyway is some of the most horror. And even after you have the election results that you have, some of the most horrifying stuff that still exists in our society, and probably why some people are going to refuse to show up at Thanksgiving dinner because they believe that nonsense. All right, quick break. A lot more coming up. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
Not able to catch all 3 hours of The Dana Show? Subscribe to the full podcast and get news and laughs delivered in short, easy-to-digest episodes. Ideal for your busy lifestyle on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is The Dana Show. Let's do a quick five.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I love one of these stories. A snow globe sparked an investigation at an airport. A snow globe that people were worried was something it wasn't causes people to, you know, go ahead and check something more aggressively than you need to, and then find out, oh, everything's okay, guys. It's just a snow globe. It's definitely not what we thought it was. That story's crazy, and probably people regret buying that now as an item you were trying to take with you when you traveled. I would just want to not have people assume I have a bomb on me. Other things out there that I like, the Alpha Bridge method to falling asleep has gone viral. This is a method that they think was developed by the Navy or the Air Force, letting you sleep in small confined spaces for however much time you can get. Essentially, the steps are this. First, you get as comfortable as possible. If you're in a bed, great. If you're sitting on an airplane or a train, whatever it is, just find the most comfortable position possible for your scenario. Then close your eyes and count to 30 slowly. Then open your eyes, but just a little bit. It says create the half moon effect. I love that. And count to 5. And then close your eyes again, count to 30 again, and continue to repeat until you fall asleep. Apparently, that training of your brain to only be thinking about counting, and then also the tightening of your eyes, like someone who is falling asleep, tricks your brain into thinking you actually are falling asleep. Also, trying to concentrate on breathing slowly, inhaling and exhaling, inhaling and then exhaling through your nose may help you fall asleep much quicker. So anyone, especially if you have a lot of stress during the holidays, try this out. See if this works for you. Counting and squinting to see if it makes you fall asleep. Pepsi is very excited about a brand new holiday flavor. They think this is going to take over compared to pumpkin spice. Zero sugar gingerbread Pepsi is what it's called. I think you actually have to get on some sort of list to try to win this, although it's probably also going to be available to buy in stores. I don't know why they're doing all these things. And actually, better question, I don't know how so many of them are zero sugar. I think Pepsi is also the company that came out with the zero sugar Oreo Pepsi. That can't be a thing. Oreos can't have zero sugar in them. That doesn't make any sense. That sounds like a very terrible product if it is that. If you're going to make a gingerbread soda product, just load it with sugar even more than it already is, man. Just accept the world you're in. But they're saying as the pumpkin spice crave is dying out, and apparently there's data that backs that up, they want to replace it with a gingerbread craze. And I just get mad at the world we live in and also laugh at the world we live in sometimes. McDonald's has gotten into the holiday spirit. For a limited time, they're going to do a two-toy Happy Meal. I think also the adult Happy Meal will come with two toys. It is rather sad that there's an adult Happy Meal at all in our society, but darn it, people love nostalgia. The company said it will sell pet simulator Happy Meals, which have two toys in them that are, I guess, like created gameplay sort of things with Roblox and whatnot. All this sounds bad. If you want a pet, get a real one, not an electronic one. And if you want more than one toy in your Happy Meal, I don't know, go ahead and buy an extra toy from a real store instead of the Happy Meal stuff that you know you're going to throw out. You know you're not going to keep it. The Happy Meal toys are the most wasted things in everybody's house. My mom actually saved a bunch of them, which is hilarious because whenever we find them, we go, oh yeah, this stuff that we don't care about at all. But it's nice to have it, I guess. All right, quick break. A little more coming up. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
The Dana Show Podcast, your fast, funny, and informative news companion for those always on the move. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. You can find Dana everywhere, all over social media, a D-Lash or Dana Lash Radio on X, on Twitter. She's on Rumble, YouTube, all the stuff, podcasting, as you heard. Pretty much everything. Follow her. She's awesome. All right. Some quick things. This not at all awesome. Several different nominees that Trump has put forward for his cabinet have already been threatened with either bomb threats, swatting attacks that have been attempted, where you call up, bomb squads and whatnot and tell them that someone is dangerous, trying to get a significant police response to people's homes. I think Fox News was one of the first to break this story. Here's a little bit of that coverage.
Trump picks have been targeted by violent bomb threats and swatting. That according to the Trump transition team. No injuries have been reported. Brian Yenis is live from West Palm Beach, Florida, with the latest on all of this. We're beginning to get a little more information of names being added to this list. What do we know, Brian?
By the way, it's just crazy that this is a thing that's real at all. And if this is something, and it does happen on other occasions, this wouldn't be a first for this sort of activity. But when it does happen and it's targeting the left, we hear about it constantly. When it happens and it's targeting the right, it's going to be way less of a story because some people actually have empathy for those who are doing these horrific, crazy things. Here's a little bit more of that coverage.
Yeah, that's right, Molly. Well, sources tell Fox News that nearly a dozen of President-elect Trump's new administration picks have been threatened, at least since Tuesday night. And we now know the identities of at least five of those appointees and nominees that have received those threats. We begin with Trump's pick for CIA Director John Ratcliffe, then his nominee for Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, Brooke Rollins, his pick for Agriculture Secretary, and his nominee for the Environmental Protection Agency, Lee Zeldin, who says a pipe bomb threat was sent to his family with a pro-Palestinian theme message.
It's insane. And that's only four of the names that are out there. Elise Stefanik is another name that's been put out there now. Matt Gaetz, even though he's no longer even actually a nominee, the former attorney general nominee, also threatened. This is the tolerant left. This is the demonstration of that side of the aisle that says that the problem in today's world is that the right is terrible and mean and horrible people, and the left is these kind, loving, understanding people that, you know, don't deserve any of the things that happen to them whenever Trump is in charge. Not that anything happens to these people that are afraid of, I don't know what again, Like, seriously, somebody's got to tell me, what is the average person afraid of that's so upset that Trump was elected president, and what's going to happen over the next four years? Paying less money for your groceries? Is that something you're afraid of? I don't know. By the way, I'll just play this audio. It's sort of terrifying as a transition from what I was just talking about, the seriousness of bomb threats and things, even if they don't wind up being real. This is definitely worse sounding than it actually is. A bunch of white liberal women, that's how they're described in a bunch of different news places, and also based on the video, that's who seems to be there, went to a lake to primal scream at the top of their lungs. I think this happened in Wisconsin. I'll play a little bit of the audio. It is just a bunch of people screaming, but you should know, because you're probably going to picture like either a scary movie and a crazy thing happening, or an actual horrible thing happening. They're all just standing on the side of a lake, a beach-esque lake thing, and just screaming at the top of their lungs that Trump got elected. Absolutely unhinged, mentally unstable people, but here we go. I can't play that much of it. There's like 2 minutes of this, and it's just woman after woman standing and leaning and screaming and waiting for the next one to... All right, fine, I'll give you a few more seconds. This is nuts. And by the way, it's only like 40 people. But I guess when you have the camera that close and all the people standing there screaming in unison, it sounds insane. But this is another thing happening. I love some of the comments on the posts that went viral with this video too. One person seems to be upset that there's been no head shaving, that all the hair is still there for everybody, and they're just screaming into the wind and then hoping that gets whatever rage they have out. Again, another example of the incredibly tolerant and loving left to go to the lake and just scream at stuff as a group of people. One other thing that I want to play, and I do really enjoy this over the last 24 hours, Walmart is the latest company to announce that they're going to roll back DEI initiatives, because DEI initiatives kind of just sound like a different form of racism, and that doesn't sound good to vocally say out loud, I'm going to hire people based on things other than their qualifications and if they deserve a job, which even for the people who get a job, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, based on that reason, won't feel good about it. Like, you're actually taking away the achievement of someone that you hire when the person you hire is a minority or someone that falls under the DEI umbrella, and then you tell them that you're doing it because of your DEI initiative. I've said this too, and I'm not trying to help people do this stuff better, but the weirdest thing to me about DEI is that they say it out loud, because it's inherently a racist thing. Like, I know the victim is white people, so I guess to some you're allowed, like that's allowed and okay in our society. To other people, it's not okay no matter who it is. But nonetheless, what I think is interesting is if they just did this quietly, they wouldn't get the PR benefit from it. But if what they actually want is a diverse workforce, then they could just hire one. They could make those decisions and not tell us the truth about it, and we'd have questions. Again, I'm not trying to help them do it better. It's just the obsession with getting the political win, whether you're actually a politician or a business, that makes this a thing that we get to argue about. Them saying the quiet part out loud is in fact part of the problem they face and us calling for it to be over. But here's how CNN dealt with Walmart deciding that DEI doesn't make sense for them anymore now that Trump was elected president.
Conservatives fighting back against corporate DEI may have scored their biggest victory yet. Walmart, the nation's largest private employer, just announced it is rolling back its diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives amid outcries over so-called corporate wokeism and claims that DEI is more divisive than inclusive.
It is.
Walmart says it's ending...
By the way, that's not just claims. There's data that proves it. I'll get to in a second.
Racial equity training programs for staff, evaluating programs designed to increase supplier diversity, reviewing funding of pride events,
uh-huh,
and removing sexual or transgender products marketed to children.
Okay, I love that last one is a controversial one to CNN. Removing transgender or sexual products marketed toward children, that feels like something that shouldn't be there. It feels like something that doesn't make sense. A lot of kids not thinking about that stuff and don't need to have products that are aimed at that stuff, aimed at them. But anyway, I say this because there's a brand new study out that got a whole lot of attention, or at least got attention in certain places. Probably not the kind of thing that a lot of media is going to tell you about, that made it, it did a simple test. It asked about 300 to 400 participants, half of them given one set of reading materials, half of them giving another set of reading materials, to judge a scenario where race did not exist, where the racial identity of people wasn't even given to them. And they were asked if they saw racism within this scenario, like a hiring scenario or something. And again, they made painstakingly sure that the scenario itself had no forms of racism. Very simple statements like person applies for job with, you know, qualified background and doesn't get job is all that it says. It doesn't say that it's a man, a woman, that they're interviewed by a man, a woman, anybody's race. And if your reading material was racially charged, if people of certain, you know, expertise, or at least claimed expertise, had written these things, and you read these things about racism, you invented it. You saw it where it didn't exist. Robin DiAngelo is the name of one of the people whose writings was given to some of the individuals before they judged the scenario. Other people were given facts about corn. I love that too. Like the significance of that industry in our country. It's a big one. The amount of farmers who create corn, et cetera, et cetera. Again, just nice reading material to learn about. And then you were given a scenario. If you weren't charged in your brain with racist thoughts or thoughts of what is and isn't racism, you didn't invent it. You didn't see it. This is a study that's been proven again and again. Honestly, if you know anyone that's studied medicine or, you know, psychology, any of those things, they wind up diagnosing themselves with a lot of the things they study. It's a common phenomenon. Once you get your brain to start think about things, oh, I'm depressed. Oh, I'm this, I'm that. Whatever it is I'm learning about, I think I have enough of the symptoms that I probably have it too. It happens constantly. It's a weird thing our brain does. So the same is true about race. If you make it in the forefront of our minds when it's not there, we can then invent scenarios where we're seeing it play a part in something it has no involvement in. So I love when they say that the claim for those that fight against things like DEI is that it actually makes an environment more racially charged than less, because it's a proven stat, especially for those who wouldn't at all behave with any motivation whatsoever based on race. And honestly, even teaching us to separate ourselves in a way we might not immediately think to do it. And I know a lot of people claim that that can't be true. I'll say one last thing about this, and then I'll take a break and we'll end on some lighter stuff. I'm a white dude. I'm about 40 years old. Whenever anybody talks to me about how I have to be racist because I'm white, I look at them and I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, you have to think about it. If you're in a room with people that don't look the same as you, you have to be thinking, not just that they don't look the same as you, but something negative. Like there's got to be something deeper there that's hidden that white people don't admit to. And of course I notice race. I'm not blind. I'm not a moron. I don't walk into a room where, you know, someone's a different ethnicity than me and just see a white guy. But that can be all it is. It can be like walking into a room and noticing what color the walls are painted. Being like, oh, these are white walls or blue walls or whatever. And then not caring, not changing my opinion of the room based on that information. A lot of us can operate, can live that way, can have learned that behavior or have had that behavior instilled in us or just have it be, you know, sort of naturally there. And they behave as though it can't be. They being the people that claim that this sort of stuff has to be taught to us over and over again when it doesn't have to be in the forefront of our mind. And honestly, it almost ruins the position of people who don't think about that. I'll always remember this. I've told this story before. I think I've even told it on this platform before, a giant platform that I'm thrilled to be on. I sat in a meeting at a media company, not the one at all that I work for now or any of the ones that I work for now, but this was years ago, where someone actually said in a room that they could not hire another white guy for a specific position because they had too many white dudes in that role. And I looked in the room, I was one of the people working in that role, and there were some other people, and it was weird to have that be told to us by a boss who also was, in fact, a white guy, that we were not worthy of our jobs if we applied for them today because of what we look like. That's essentially what he said, is he goes, if you walked into this room right now and you were trying to get this job that you already have, we wouldn't hire you. because we shouldn't have hired you in the first place because your ethnicity is wrong. And the arrogance to say that or to behave that way at all is something that's jarring. And it's something that comes from a lot of this stuff. And so again, as you see more of these companies roll back those positions, not because they're necessarily afraid of the Trump administration, but because they're actually listening to the voice of the people who demonstrated their belief by electing someone who stands against that stuff, they're taking the feedback. The leaders of these companies that are changing their policies are hearing the message that was given that all the politicians and other people are trying to still ignore. And that being that these things are not things that we overwhelmingly agree with, even if you think we do. All right, quick break, a little bit more. Craig Collins filling in on The Dana Show.
On the go and need a quick news fix with a fun twist? Follow Dana's Absurd Truth Podcast for bite-sized, informative episodes perfect for your busy schedule on Apple or wherever you get your podcast.
This is The Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in just before the holidays. Dana is back after the holidays. Enjoy your Thanksgiving, everyone, is I guess the last thing I kind of want to say. I'll do a couple sillier topics before I get out of here. But just about the holiday. And if you happen to have family members who do think differently than you, but are willing to break bread with you, are willing to sit down at the table and have a discussion with you, I think it's great. I think that that's what our society needs. You don't have to have a long-form political argument at Thanksgiving. You could do part of it, say, after the meal, if you do it at all. But again, I think that there's something about that should be sadly celebrated in the society in which we live. And also for those people who go in guns a-blazing that are expecting to get in fights with everybody, I feel bad for people that have to deal with that, no matter which side of the political aisle you're on, because of how much that stuff must live rent-free in your mind, that you would want to blow up, say, a relationship with a family member or friend over political disagreements, that you couldn't judge the human being for the character that you think they have outside of whoever they punched a ticket for, but you have to attribute all these qualities to them because of what you think it means to say vote Trump or vote someone else. I don't know. It's just sort of crazy. All right, before I get out of here, as far as lighthearted stuff, and it's weird this is lighthearted, a college kid in Seattle managed to walk away completely unharmed after a giant tree fell in his car last week. The kid's name is Tyson. He talked about it with news recently. I love the fact that they even took a photo of him. He was laying in the passenger seat of his vehicle, crouched down because the tree made it impossible to get out of the car and also impossible to sit upright, but eventually thought it was kind of funny. And also was kind of thrilled that he had the photo now that he's fine. And I assume insurance is cutting him a check for the vehicle.
I kind of just slumped back in my chair or in my seat a little bit, bracing for impact. And sure enough, the tree crashes. I tried to open my driver's side door. No use. The tree was totally horizontal on my car and I was stuck. She said, well, do you want me to take your picture? And her reasoning, she said, well, you might never get to see this angle again.
True.
So at first it threw me off, but then she was right. Even in the moment, even as I was trapped, a bit of gratefulness. And once I was pulled out, I gave them the tightest hug. I was so thankful to go home that night.
Yeah, you better be thankful to the first responders who get you out of a situation like that. But it is kind of amusing to me that he goes, you know, after I paused and thought about it for a second, and it's a miracle that I'm alive, I actually didn't feel so bad. And actually, his photo has him doing a peace sign toward the camera, laying, as I said, in the passenger seat, crouched down in a car that just seems absolutely devastated by a tree, but he's fine. He's doing okay. So absolutely a positive attitude. If that guy can be happy with what just went on with him and the miraculous fact that he's not injured at all, then anybody else can be happy going in to say your Thanksgiving meal and having whatever discussions you have. Again, eat whatever you want, behave however you want, enjoy yourself. That's probably not good advice to give in those terms on the radio. I do it all within the legal context of the law, but go ahead and do it and don't worry about it. And darn it, the people who are willing to sit down and hang out with you anyway, they're the people you probably should care about the most. Craig Collins filling in. Dana Lash is back after the holiday. This is The Dana Show.